Welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She is joined by her co-host Jessica and producer Mike Clark. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better.
Hey, everybody. So my friend Erin, she was listening to the last podcast, which if you've heard it, it was number 31, Aspirin, Celebrity Perfumes, and the Muppets. If you guys remember that we talked about how Sesame Street had paired up with Merck to create four superfood Muppets, and it was a little bit ludicrous. They weren't really superfoods.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes.
So Erin said to me, I was disappointed that you didn't end that discussion with telling us what you feel the true superfood Muppets could be. So I've been thinking about it, and you know, I'll speak for myself. If I were to say my four superfoods that I love to eat, that I eat all the time, personally, I would say kale, avocado, almonds, and eggs.
What about sea vegetables?
Okay, well, that could be one of yours.
I've never even had one.
What would yours be, Jessica?
Sea vegetables, broccoli, salmon, blueberries.
Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Can I take a hall pass on this one?
Well, yeah, you can, Mike, because Okay. Your wife admitted to me that the other day you sat on the couch and ate an entire box of Cheez-Its in one sitting.
Yeah. Whoa.
Have we taught you nothing?
No, I'm going to go sit in the corner now.
Was it the economy box from the big box store?
No, but I have done those.
Okay, but here's the real question. Who bought the box?
My wife did.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we know what we need to do.
You know, I'm guilty of that too, though, because my husband loves Cheez-Its, but I won't buy that brand. I buy the healthier version.
What is the healthier version? What do you buy?
I don't even know the name brand, but it's made with wheat flour instead of white
flour.
Those
TLC crackers or whatever.
No, they're not TLC.
Okay, so how about next time we record the show, Jessica, you bring in a box of that, and we'll let Mike try it on the air.
Okay.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
So more in the news. I have several articles that I have found online, through magazines, through Facebook, you name it, that I think are interesting and that our listeners would like to know more about.
I'm sure they would.
Yes. The first one was printed on naturalnews.com. It's by Dr. David Jockers, and he writes an article called Healthy Sleep Cycles Balance Hormones and Burn Fat. Now, what's really interesting is he refers to researchers at Johns Hopkins University, and that they estimate that by the year 2015, over 75% of Americans will be overweight, with a staggering 41% being obese.
We're well on our way there.
Now,
I think.
Isn't that crazy?
Come on. I think if you sit in the parking lot to certain department stores and you watch people go in and out, you'll see that now.
Well, what's interesting is this article is talking about how it's not just our country's propensity to overeat and indulge on junk food or even just a lack of willpower. Science is showing that our lack of health may be related to our hormones. This new research is showing that healthy sleep cycles have been shown to balance the hormones responsible for food cravings and overeating. So when we're not getting healthy sleep, our hormones that control our eating patterns are out of whack. So, for example, there's a hormone called ghrelin. It's produced by the stomach, and it's what stimulates hunger. Now, there's also a hormone called leptin, and that's secreted by our fat cells and interacts with our hypothalamus, and that creates feelings of satiety, or we feel less hungry. So what happens is these researchers at Stanford University found that people who sleep 5 hours or less per night had a 15% greater amount of ghrelin, or the hormone that makes you hungry, and 15% less leptin, the hormone that makes you feel full, than those who slept 8 hours a night.
This totally makes sense now. Everything makes sense now.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was getting 5 hours a night of sleep, and I would come into work and people would bring in muffins and Girl Scout cookie season, and I was eating other people's Girl Scout cookies that had ordered them.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is I did go through a phase in my life that I was getting up extremely early in the morning, usually by 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was just a healthy habit to get more done, to have more morning rituals. And I do believe there were a lot of benefits from doing that. However, I remember about a year and a half into it, thinking to myself, I feel like it's harder to maintain a healthy weight. I feel like I've gained weight. And my gut feeling was that it was related to not getting enough sleep. So this actually shows that there can be a correlation.
Thank you for that ammo. Now I have an excuse to sleep in the morning.
Now, of course, we're not necessarily talking about quality of sleep, which we've done a sleep broadcast that talks about quality. So that is a factor. But you know, here another study showed that sleep-deprived individuals had a significantly greater craving for carbohydrate-rich junk food.
Oh, yes.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, you know, you get 5 hours of sleep and you're driving to work and you drive by the fast food place that sells the donuts or sells some type of breakfast sandwich. And of course, you're going to want to do that. It's a that bagel.
It's that quick temporary energy that lasts a very short time. You crash and then you want more. And the cycle repeats itself all day long.
Shut off the television and go to sleep.
Right. And what's really crazy is this article says that over time, the person will become leptin resistant if they're not eating well, which virtually shuts down the body's ability to effectively burn fat.
I'm going to take a nap right after the show, I think.
Well, and here's another reason. And the article goes on to say that sleeping has been shown to enhance human growth hormone, secretin, and that's our body's natural anti-aging hormone. That also switches our metabolism to burn fat, build muscle, and boost immunity. Okay, so the next study. This also came from Natural News by a staff writer named Jonathan Benson. And he says, title of the study, if you had swine flu, you now have super immunity.
Woohoo! Bring it on!
Seriously. So these researchers in the UK have made an interesting discovery concerning swine flu. According to their report, which was published in the Journal of Experimental Medicine, people who have had the H1N1 influenza virus and recovered now have a type of super immunity that is able to fend off many different flu viruses. So they're saying that getting that flu is like the best flu shot you could ever take.
That makes sense, though.
Well, it does make sense.
Yeah.
But this is where it gets a little bit crazy. Dr. Patrick Wilson and his team, that's the researchers from Emory University, they're from Harvard University, Columbia University, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, they observed this group of 9 patients that had developed swine flu during the 2009 pandemic to see how their bodies responded to the infection. They also noticed that, contrary to what occurs following the contraction of normal seasonal flu strains, swine flu patients generated a host of powerful antibodies capable of fighting off many forms of flu. And their conclusion is they want to use these antibodies that these people created after having the flu and use that to develop universal flu vaccine.
I'm just going to find someone with swine flu and give them a big kiss.
Let's go to the airport and lick doorknobs or something.
I mean, they're missing the point. I mean, they just realized, okay, the people get the swine flu, they recover, they're fine, and now they have super immunity. What, you know, why wouldn't we just want to talk about how can you ensure that you can get the flu and recover in a healthy way because your body is strong?
Because you can't make money off that.
Well, that's true. But isn't that just crazy?
Yeah, that's wild.
Trying to have this control by using a flu shot for everyone, it just doesn't make sense. And here is a reason why. This is another article that was in Huffington Post. This was just a few days ago. And Mike Stobe is the author. And the title is Vaccine Seizures, Feds Checking Out Post-Flu Shot Seizures in Young Kids. So what's happening is government officials are investigating an apparent increase in fever-related seizures in young children after they got a flu shot.
I think it'd be better to have the flu.
Yeah,
I know. So the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said that there were 36 confirmed reports of seizures this flu season in children ages 6 months through 2 years. The seizures occurred within 1 day after they were vaccinated with Fluzone, the only flu shot recommended in the U.S. for infants and very young children. You know, and what's interesting is the government uses this national reporting system to monitor these, you know, side effects and doesn't always get to the reporting system. I mean, you have to assume it's a very small percentage that actually get to the reporting system.
That's what you're here for, Jenny.
Yeah, let people know it's
That's
there.
Right. That's right. That's why everyone should listen to Jenny.
Well, and the whole reason that
sometimes.
The whole reason they even caught this was that the FDA officials have been paying extra special attention to seizure reports because there was this unexplained higher rate of fevers and seizures in young children in Australia and New Zealand who got a specific flu vaccine. So they only found it because they decided to go looking for it.
I think it's so sad that so much of our tax money is going to promote this stuff. Get the flu, get the flu.
Well, and the good thing is in August, a U.S. vaccine advisory panel said doctors should avoid using that vaccine. And it's one that was made by CSL Biotherapies. And they said not to use it in children ages 6 months through 8 years. And just so you know, these fever-related seizures are called febrile seizures. And they're convulsions that are brought on by a fever in infants and small children. So they take the vaccine, their body creates a fever because it's saying, hey, there's a toxin in my body, let me try to get rid of this.
Right, which it's supposed to do.
Right, and oftentimes the child will lose consciousness and get the shakes. So, you know, most seizures, they last a minute or two, and the child does oftentimes recover, but that's a scary
thing
for parents.
Yeah.
And then lastly, before we take a short break, I want to refer to an article that was in Health Yahoo, and it talks about the worst sandwiches in America.
Oh, no.
You ready? Okay. So who likes Panera? I like Panera. I actually find that for...
I'm not a huge fan.
I find that the kids will eat things there. They have all-natural chicken. They have organic yogurt, which I like. If I have to grab something on the go, that's probably going to be my choice. But I'll tell you, I'm not going to get their full Italian combo on ciabatta. Yeah, so this thing has over 1,000 calories, 45 grams of fat, and over 3,000 milligrams of sodium. But no worries, here's the shortcut. Stick to their cafe category on the menu. So instead of that, eat their full tuna salad on honey wheat. Now, granted, tuna is going to have mercury probably. But if you just want to look at the calories, their full tuna salad on honey wheat bread is 590 calories, 28 grams of fat, and 1,100 milligrams of sodium. So
I am
much better.
Craving a tuna fish sandwich right now.
So my niece is a huge fan of Quiznos. So if she's listening, I want her to know that you want to avoid Quiznos double cheese cheesesteak. Now, come on, anything that has double cheese in it is probably not going to be, and this is the large version, but we're talking 1,450 calories,
Woo.
89 grams of fat, and 2,900 milligrams of sodium about.
It's got to taste good, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nutritional nightmare right there.
No
doubt. And that's really better fit for two people. I mean, that's more than a day's worth of sodium and fat. And the listen to this, the caloric equivalent of more than 7 Krispy Kreme glazed donuts.
Wow.
I'm getting so hungry right now for food that I should never eat.
Now, something that has a tenth of the fat is their honey bourbon chicken, regular size. So this is at Quiznos. Only 520 calories and only 8 grams of fat and about 1,470 milligrams of sodium.
You can pretty much tell by the title of it, too. I mean, that sounds so much cleaner than cheesy cheese cheese.
So you ready for the number one worst sandwich in America?
It's got to be one of the big chains.
Cheesecake Factory, Grilled Shrimp and Bacon Club.
Don't you love the Cheesecake Factory, though?
I do. This sandwich has a whopping 1,890 calories. That's the caloric equivalent of 7 McDonald's hamburgers.
The three of us could live off that for the whole week, I think.
Wow.
It's 24 grams of fat and almost 3,000 milligrams of sodium.
Wow.
And the article says, here's the crazy thing about the Cheesecake Factory. Despite the all-star lineup of the worst foods in America, it's also home to one of the best sit-down burgers in the country. So what you should eat instead is choose their factory burger. That's only 730 calories, 15 grams of fat, and about 1,000 milligrams
of sodium. The burgers are fabulous.
So there you
They're
go.
Wonderful.
Factory grass? Is it grass-fed beef, though?
No, but they do have a Kobe burger on their menu, I believe. Great. So when we come back from break, we're going to talk about a Newsweek article entitled Why Almost Everything You Hear About Medicine Is Wrong. We're also going to talk about bugs as food.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
We're back, and I was just recently on Newsweek.com, and a journalist, Sharon Begley, wrote an article called "Why Almost Everything You Hear About Medicine Is Wrong," which is a pretty strong statement. So she talks about this Dr. John P. A. Leonidas. He's the new chief of Stanford University's Prevention Research Center. And he was showing how even just in the last 2 months, there's been these pillars of preventive medicine just falling. For example, there was this major study that finally concluded after over 34,000 patients that there's no good evidence that statin drugs, that's Lipitor and Crestor, that's given for cholesterol, that it does, they don't help people who don't have a history of heart disease.
They scare you into taking those, too. I see those ads all the time. Don't have a heart attack at 56, take Lipitor
or whatever. They give you other health problems and side effects. Yeah. And
but yet, people were shown with no symptoms, even just high cholesterol, or even as prevention, they should take this drug.
That's what I mean.
And it finally took them to show it doesn't work. So what happens is this guy, Dr. Leonidas, says that, you know, when you do thousands of tests, statistics say you'll have some false winners. And he believes drug companies make a mint on such dicey statistics. So by testing an approved drug for other uses, for example, they get hits by chance, and doctors use that as the basis to prescribe the drug for this new use. And he thinks that's wrong.
I just think it's unethical. Why would, if somebody has a history of high cholesterol in their family and their cholesterol is currently normal, why would you give them a drug instead of saying, well, why not continue to live a healthy life?
It's because it's not actual prevention oriented. And like Mike said, there's no money in that.
Right.
And he finishes by saying, I wouldn't be surprised if a large proportion of surgical practice is based on thin air, and claims for effectiveness would evaporate if we studied them closely. He also said it would save billions of dollars. And George Lungberg, he's the former editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association, he estimates that strictly applying criteria, like Leonidas pushes for, would save $700 billion to $1 trillion a year in U.S. healthcare spending. But yet, you know, this is a profession that purports that they base everything they do on science, when the science in and of itself can be tricky.
Fuzzy science.
Well, and speaking of that, there was this another article in Natural News by Neil Z. Miller, and it's called False Foundations of Science: Can Vaccine Studies Be Trusted? And he starts off the article by saying, many scientific studies are literally nonsense. This is not a conspiracy theory. For example, the Journal of the AMA published a paper showing that 1/3 of highly cited original clinical research studies were eventually contradicted by subsequent studies. He says it's not unusual for the science of today to degenerate into tomorrow's fiction. And he specifically goes on about vaccine studies. And what's disturbing is he says they're often funded by vaccine manufacturers.
Well, if you look through history a little bit, you know, that always happens. You know, they're prescribing drugs to women that are pregnant, then they find out it created birth defects, you know, 20 years later. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's especially concerning when the actual studies are flawed, in that the people who fund the studies or do the studies have a reason to want a certain outcome.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying that they may own stock in the company or they're paid by the manufacturer to travel around the country promoting their vaccines. Lead authors may actually receive consultation fees, grants, or other benefits from the drug maker.
Of course.
And he says, although many people consider this unethical or corrupt, in the world of immunizations, this is an acceptable practice condoned by the CDC and FDA. There was this landmark study published in Pediatrics, and it's found that cumulative exposure to thimerosal-containing vaccines resulted in a significant positive association with tics and increased risks of language delays. And I'll tell you, in our practice, we're seeing more and more kids with verbal tics and with motor tics. And basically what they're saying, in other words, babies that received two or more vaccines containing mercury showed signs of neurological damage. And this is crucial information that can be found in the body of this study that was done. But the authors concluded that no consistent significant associations were found between thimerosal-containing vaccines and neurodevelopmental outcomes. And then, of course, the media prints that. But if you actually look at the study, it's contradictory. Isn't that crazy? And on a lighter note, which may or may not be
I'm ready
light
for
you.
A lighter note.
Have you heard all the stuff about Taco Bell, Mike?
No.
Do you go to Taco Bell?
No.
Well,
I love Mexican, but I won't eat Taco Bell.
This is what happened. They're being sued. So this was on Gizmodo.com, and they're being sued because this Alabama law firm has discovered that what they call beef is only 36% actual beef.
What's the rest? Chihuahua
Ew.
Meat?
Well, it's
Mike, you're going to get PETA after us now.
It's water. And then listen to this. Jessica, tell me if you think you know what these refer to. Isolated oat products, soy lecithin, maltodextrin, autolyzed yeast extract, citric acid, natural flavors, yeast modified cornstarch.
MSG, 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 MSG.
I think all that stuff's in Cheez-Its too.
If you study excitotoxins, which are glutamate, free glutamic acid, you'll start to know that basically they're the equivalent of what we refer to as MSG, which is a brain exciter that can damage nerve cells. And it comes under many, many names, of which there's what, like five or six in this beef. And you know, it makes things taste good. It's a flavor enhancer.
Right. Yeah. It hits something in your taste buds.
Makes you want more and more and more.
But why they're being sued is because they're deceiving people. You know, everything's processed into this mass that looks like beef, and it's packed into these big containers that actually say taco meat filling. And by the way, it comes out of a meat tube.
Ew.
And it's not meat. But you know what's interesting is the last...
That's why you can buy four of them for 50 cents, though.
Well, that's right.
MSG's pretty cheap. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's basically augmented with fibers, you know, substances that keep the price low.
The trouble with that is so many teenage kids eat that stuff all the time.
I know.
You know?
Maybe that's where zits come from.
Maybe.
Well, the last paragraph says, the final irony, the USDA says that any food labeled as meat taco filling should be at least 40% fresh meat. And because they're
That's
at 36,
it?
They fall
That's
below.
It?
So perhaps they should call it almost taco filling.
40% meat?
But if you live in Holland, you might be eating bugs soon. So this was in Natural News by Jonathan Benson, and it's titled, Dutch Scientists Push for Bugs to Replace Meat as a Food Source.
That sounds a lot healthier than eating a Taco Bell.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sounds crunchy, too.
They're talking about worm pralines, grasshopper spring rolls, mealworm pastries. This all came out of a research team from the University in the Netherlands, and they really believe that insects and other bugs are more sustainable food source for humans than traditional cows and pigs are. You know, and they want us to agree with them. And they actually believe that eating bugs is maybe humanity's only way to escape the coming food crisis.
You know, if they made a protein powder out of that, I might drink it.
Well, and you know, other countries do this. In Mexico, the local population consumes about 500 different types of insects. In Africa, locals eat about 250 varieties. And then this was the part that got me. It says, even Westerners already unknowingly eat roughly 500 grams of mixed bug residue every year due to its unseen presence in many processed food products.
Sure. It's probably in cornmeal and stuff.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Well, even on, you know, fresh farm vegetables, I'm sure I've eaten plenty of bugs.
Yeah. There's a couple hidden in there.
So it's really not that far off. You never know. So on that note, maybe I should add to my superfoods, not just kale, avocado, almonds, and eggs, but grasshopper.
Yum.
Put some grasshopper in the Vitamix with some frozen blueberries.
You never know.
Yeah.
You know, after this
great
radio
protein
show, I just about eat anything. I'm starving.
Okay, so Caterpillar Cheez-Its?
Sure, let's do
it.
Oh,
now that sounds disgusting.
Till next time, be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to SpinalCorrectiveCenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's SpinalCorrectiveCenter.com or call 603-673-5600.